Yeah, I'm very much grateful for the invitation to speak here. And I, as far as I understand, people consider non-standard mathematics as part of model theory. Is this true?
Yeah.
So in this case, I think, in fact, I'm a model theorist, because I think in 2001-2002, I read hundreds of books on non-standard analysis. I'm sure I read more than 80% of people present in this audience. So I really learned a lot of non-standard mathematics 3-4 years ago, and I was very much impressed by this. I can only compare this with eating an apple for some other personages in the Bible. But then, of course, when my eyes opened, I was very enthusiastic about applying model non-standard mathematics in number theory. And of course, then everyone who ever worked in non-standard mathematics understands sooner or later that, in fact, you cannot get free lunch. And the most difficult part is to descend down by using standard path map. And this is where you pay the price for the beauty of the theory in saturated modules, when you won't go down back to the ordinary world. So you cannot descend from the sky down to Earth easily. This is the main problem. So in fact, the title of my talk has changed a little bit, and the change was motivated by Angus McIntyre talk. I thought he gave a very nice introduction and review of the past. And I suppose at the end of this workshop, he will give another lecture where he will forecast the nearest future. So to help him a little bit, but also to give an outsider point of view, I just would like to state several problems for M theorists. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to call model theorists M theorists, but there is already K theorist community and L theorist community, and it would be natural to introduce the notion of M theorist community. And also, you can always, if you don't like this, you can call all number theorists N theorists. And M and N, neighboring letters in the alphabet. And in fact, I believe that M, or model theories, has a tremendous potential to be applied in number theory and interaction of number theory with several other parts of mathematics. So, of course, model theory allows one to look beyond the surface of things, which is very important, because you can gain new insights. And people who work in model theory, they always have to learn several other areas just to apply model theory. And lectures given at this workshop demonstrate this to a very great extent. So from this point of view, model theory shares a common feature with number theory, where you also have to know many parts of mathematics outside number theory if you want to do anything really interesting inside number theory. And also with mathematical physics, where of course you have to use plenty of other parts of mathematics and also except number theory, in fact. So if we speak about quantum physics, then there are many voices by physicists and by number theorists arguing that in the 21st century, number theory and quantum physics should interact much more than they did in the past. In particular, a famous physicist Waffer argues that quantum mechanics will be totally rewritten by using number theory. Well, this would be, of course, a very good event if this ever would happen. But on the other hand, people like Manion, they always want to apply ideas from quantum physics to number theory. But it would be probably fair to say that really not so much has been done in the unification and interaction of number theory and quantum physics. So my point of view for this talk is that it is model theory which might help to unite or at least to clarify possible areas of interaction between number theory and quantum physics. And in fact, I will try to give seven examples later in my talk which support this point of view to various extent. In fact, one could go even further, and if you are happy with the arrogance of outsider who tries to speak about the future of your subject, then you perhaps forgive me if I would say that from my point of view, model theory has extremely bright future if it is applied to interaction of other parts of mathematics and to explanation of various similarities between different parts of mathematics. And if in this application it plays a proactive role, not only a passive role, but actually an active role. So at least in this application, I'm sure there are many interesting things, and I will try to explain them. Also, these three things, these three theories, they have several other formal similarities. And well, in some sense, they all three trying to handle infinities to various extent by working with different orders of reality. And of course, everyone knows that in poetry it is symbolism which works with, which was trying to work with different orders of reality. And Jules Laforgue, a French poet, symbolist, he even wrote, "Infinity, where do you spring from? Infinity, show up your papers." So from this point of view, I think model theory, if we now transfer back to mathematics, model theory really clarifies the role of various kinds of infinities which mysteriously show up in quantum physics and in non-commutative number theory and two-dimensional number theory. So I will try to explain this as well, a little bit. So the following things which I would like to discuss they illustrate this general attitude. So one of them is interaction between commutative and non-commutative series, and another is interaction between behavior of objects in characteristic zero, say over number fields, and characteristic zero over complex numbers, Riemann surfaces, or even in characteristic P. And another is analogies between so-called infinite prime and finite primes. And also I will explain how in two-dimensional arithmetic several objects which are typical to model theory naturally show up. Now, going back to number theory, it is probably true, and well, we can ask, of course, the expert John Coates, that really the main object in number theory is zeta function. Zeta function is really the most important central object in number theory. And zeta function is analytic object which is defined to some arithmetic, as an analytic object associated to arithmetic object. And if you know properties of zeta function of arithmetic object, then, well, you know a lot of information about the arithmetic object itself. This association was, of course, invented already by Euler, who in fact also used some part of model theory, even though maybe almost no one really understands this. But this is the point of view which I heard from some Japanese mathematicians. So Euler already invented zeta function, and then it was extended to complex numbers by Riemann. And at that time, it was very natural extension because complex analysis was just the main leading part inside mathematics in the middle of the 19th century. But of course, now 150 years later, there are many other mathematical theories which don't use any analysis at all very often. But we still have only one most important object, and it's of analytic origin. So if we can make this analytic object somehow more algebraic, then we can really gain more insight about the behavior of zeta functions. And so in some sense, of course, this is very vague, and in fact, the whole talk is very vague, because otherwise it would not be possible to give it in one over. One of the most important problems in number theory is a kind of algebraization of zeta function, of analytic zeta functions. And all the main conjectures in number theory about zeta functions, they relate analytical behavior with some arithmetical or algebraic behavior, algebraic invariants or arithmetical invariants. So if we can algebraize analytical functions, then of course we can greatly profit from this. In quantum physics, of course, one of the most important objects is so-called Feynman path integral, which was invented in 1948. And at that time, people were so keen to finish their projects on creating weapons of mass destruction that they did not really care much about mathematical justification of any of those physical objects. Well, this is just one point of view on this. But anyway, it was created in 1948, and according to Dyson in his lecture in 1972 given to the American Mathematical Society, that was the breaking point in a fruitful union between mathematics and physics for centuries, which eventually ended in divorce between mathematics and physics. This is an object which has a lot of physical meaning, and it's an integral over the space of all continuous functions, for example, in the square any kind of square, for example. And here we have some kind of action. But the main point is that it's an integral over kind of measure on this huge non-locally compact space, which does not exist. This measure is supposed to be translation invariant, but this space is not locally compact, so there is no such mathematical measure. This integral does not have mathematical justification. Of course, there are thousands of papers, which I also tried to learn together with papers on non-standard mathematics, which justify partially this integral, but all of them are unsatisfactory. They go only in a very, very partial direction. And we basically still don't have any mathematical understanding of the structure of this very important object. Now, this integral gives a solution of Schrödinger equation. And this is extremely important. The advantage of this integral is that it preserves all symmetries of physical symmetries. So it's extremely important object, but we're lacking any of its mathematical justification. So here, again, we have kind of object which is of analytical origin, and we want to understand it, similarly to zeta functions in number theory. And if we can algebraize, if we can make algebraic version of this integral, then perhaps it is easier to understand it. From this point of view, non-standard mathematics, or more generally model theory, can be extremely useful both in this algebraization and in algebraization of the Feynman integral, and then its mathematical justification. Because of course, you can always say that non-standard analysis is nothing else than algebraization of analysis. And in fact, the algebraic aspect of model theory, as opposite to geometric aspect and geometrization, needs to probably to be more emphasized. In fact, it's algebraization, which is very important phenomena related to model theory applications. So, of course, everyone knows that if we pass from complex numbers to non-standard complex numbers, the theory is elementary equivalent, but this is a saturated object, and therefore we can always rewrite in this particular context the definition of continuous differentiable or analytic function on complex numbers in purely algebraic language by using rings of infinitesimals. When we use hyper or non-standard complex numbers. So this really gives a very nice algebraization of analytical objects, and therefore it's natural to seek for applications and relations between model theory and number theory and quantum physics. But I will mention later that this Feynman integral is also closely related to some objects in two-dimensional number theory. Also, in physics, what is very important is duality between discrete and continuous objects, corpuscular behavior and continuous behavior. And again, it's still lacking mathematical justification. And when you work with saturated objects, of course, even if you start with discrete objects, then saturated object becomes a kind of continuous object. And therefore, using saturated models of discrete objects and then standard path map, in fact, there are many concrete situations when one can apply non-standard mathematics to explain this duality between discrete and continuous behavior in physics. Well, and finally, to convince you that I will give seven concrete examples in a couple of minutes time. Finally, to convince that really M theory, model theory, has very bright future if one tries to apply it to number theory and quantum physics, I just refer to one of your own colleagues, French mathematician Poiseuille, who in his book, in introduction of one of his book, compares stability theory and model theory inside logic with the role of number theory and arithmetic inside mathematics. So, well, there are so many justifications and support for this application that I hope many more will be found. But now I will start with seven concrete examples, and I will already include some concrete results obtained in some of them. In the last 3 or 4 years. So because of lack of time, some of them will be just sketched and some of them will be given more detailed exposition. So the first thing is, as I said, interaction between commutative and non-commutative aspects of series. Of course, this is very vague, but my own interest to this was motivated by a series of papers by Manin and Marcoli and Kohn and many other people, in fact, where they apply non-commutative geometry to number theory. And this is really amazing application because a priori it's not clear at all how on earth can you apply non-commutative theory to describe objects which are purely commutative. But I should of course emphasize that none of these papers really gives any concrete new theorems. It's only just normally interpretation or relation, but not really anything new. Oh, this must be not Manin, but of course Kohn. So, in particular, many people heard about Kohn's efforts to prove Riemann hypothesis just for the Riemann zeta function, and they have not led anywhere. Eventually his approach was rewritten in purely commutative way, so to say. But still, this is very interesting. And so by trying to understand this, I just looked at the ring of integers, and then its elementary extension, which is the ring of non-standard integers, which is natural object to consider from the point of view of number theory. And the second object is easy to show is direct product of procyclic group that had and vector space over rationals or uniquely infinite divisible group of uncountable dimension. So this is the level of groups. But then, of course, you want to get rings. And to get a ring, you look at the endomorphism ring of a group. And of course, the endomorphism ring of integers is Z. But the endomorphism ring of hyperintegers, non-standard integers, becomes extremely large because of the presence of this infinite dimensional vector space. In particular, it contains two operators A and B such that their commutator equals the identity map on this vector space V. So we get basically almost the famous commutator relation in quantum physics inside arithmetical object like hyper or non-standard integers. So to me, in some sense, this was a very, very partial explanation why one can, in principle, try to use non-commutative theories to apply them to the study of commutative theories. One could say that all those objects in non-commutative geometry, they must come via shadow standard path map construction from saturated theories and commutative theories. And then it's not a wonder that they can be applied to the study of commutative objects like zeta function in number theory. So here I would like to state several concrete problems. So in this first direction, interaction between commutative and non-commutative, which I think model theory is most perfectly suitable to explain. And if it can, it would be really very, very nice by many reasons. The first question, sub-question is M theoretical interpretation of von Neumann and sister algebras. So those algebras are always complete, and therefore, well, there are many reasons to believe that they must come as standard path images of non-standard algebras. And the point is that Morita equivalence plays a very important role in non-commutative geometry, well, as well as in many other parts of mathematics. But Morita equivalence is not preserved under the standard path map. This is why we can have a commutative object in saturated model, but when we apply standard path map construction, we end up with non-commutative object, which is called sister of von Neumann algebra. And the second concrete question is more general M-theoretical interpretation of non-commutative geometry in the setting of Kuhn. In fact, there are several non-commutative geometries, and it's not clear at all if that one which is developed by Kuhn is the best to apply to number theory. But anyway, so in this second direction, I should mention that in the recent years, Zilber already established amazing, for me, results about quantum torus and non-commutative spaces. He's not here, so I'm allowed to tell anything I wish about his results. He cannot correct me. So I was really impressed, and probably you will be impressed as well, that he discovered that, in fact, counterexamples by Khrushchevsky to his trichotomy conjecture, which now probably should be called just Zilber postulate or Zilber principle, not a conjecture. So this counterexample can be just slightly modified, and then in fact it's non-commutative spaces which provide counterexamples to his old conjecture. So it's exactly non-commutative geometry which provides, supplies basically counterexamples to his conjecture. And this is very, very interesting. I will come back to his some other results a little bit later. So, and the third question is interpretation of Manin's real multiplication program. So this is a program inside number theory, but it asks for the use of physical objects. So this real multiplication program, just very roughly, well, by some mysterious reason in number theory we can more or less satisfactorily and explicitly handle in the global case only two situations. Situation of rationals, when we have a lot of roots of unity, and then cyclotomic theory. And situation of a complex imaginary quadratic extensions of rationals, where we have so-called complex multiplication theory. So this is all classical, more than 120 years ago. But of course, there were many important developments in the 20th century, some of which, of course, related with Iwasawa theory. So, but if you have a real quadratic field generated by real quadratic irrationality, then, well, we don't have explicit description of abelian extensions of this field, as nice as we have it when this is an imaginary quadratic irrationality. And so Manin's program, which is just a program, and it's not clear at all if one can realize it in foreseeable future, but people trying. The program is the following. Suppose that field F is either complex numbers or real numbers, depending on the situation. Then, well, one just tries to naively extend the construction in complex multiplication theory to the real case. And as soon as one does this, one just gets non-commutative spaces. So an analog of an object in which plays fundamental role in complex multiplication theory is this one. So it's either real or complex factorized by this subgroup. And this subgroup is everywhere dense in reals. So the situation when denominator is, well, when the closure of the denominator behaves like it becomes almost everything, in this case reals, such quotient space is natural to call non-commutative. They are handled by non-commutative geometry and other approaches. So anyway, this can be called quantum torus, if you wish, because it also shows up in physics and related to quantum groups. So this is non-commutative space. So the idea is to work with this non-commutative space and to get arithmetical applications. Now, I already mentioned several recent works of Zilber. In particular, he studied this object and slightly modified object from model theoretical point of view. And he proved that this object is one of them is superstable and another is quasi-minimal. If this terminology is meaningful for you, then you probably can appreciate how interesting this object is from model theoretical point of view. But one wants to prove even more than that. So I would like to emphasize that this is extremely interesting structure from the point of view of model theory, not only from the point of view of number theory and quantum physics. Now, from this structure, one can go to two possible modifications. One is by applying saturation. One is to go to non-standard complex numbers and to non-standard integers and normal two-dimensional lattice. And here theta capital is non-standard complex number such that the imaginary part of theta capital is infinitesimally small and the real part of theta capital is infinitesimally close to theta. So this is a normal, non-standard two-dimensional torus. It's commutative. And then one gets non-standard Weierstrass function, and this gives us a non-standard elliptic curve. And then Of course, in the non-standard world, we can do everything we want by transfer principle to develop analog of the complex multiplication theory, which will be non-standard complex multiplication theory. But then, as usual, when you think you already done almost everything, you understand you need to go back to the usual world, and of course, it's very difficult. It's almost impossible. But still, maybe various things in this direction can be obtained. Now, another object, I understand that this non-standard quantum torus will be also discussed in several other talks in this conference, so you will meet it again. And another way is don't do anything with theta, but just replace everything else by non-standard objects. So if you work with this quotient, then it's an exercise to show that it's isomorphic to finite non-standard real numbers modulo the original lattice. So this object was recently studied by Lawrence Taylor from Nottingham. And he discovered, well, he used the fact that this is a so-called locally internal space. Now, internal is not the same as internal in the other lectures. Internal is rather like definable, so like locally definable. Every point has a neighborhood which is kind of definable. But if you use terminology of non-standard mathematics, it probably should be called locally internal space. So this is a locally internal space, and then you can look at endomorphism ring of locally internal endomorphisms of this space. And also you can try to develop the theory of the fundamental group of locally internal spaces. So he has done already several parts of this work. And what is most amazing is that the endomorphism ring of this locally internal space is either integers or an order in this quadratic real field. And then the class group of this field, real quadratic field, acts on certain equivalence classes of such non-standard torus whose endomorphism ring is isomorphic to the ring of integers of the real field modulo certain equivalence relation. And because this action is faithful, one eventually shows that the order of the class group is the same as the order of these equivalence classes. So this is an analog of the first similar result in complex multiplication problem. This is really very nice description. And of course, the next stage is to try to identify objects appearing in this theory with algebraic curves. And of course, as a result of Khrushchevsky and Zilber, which identify certain one-dimensional Zariski geometries with algebraic curves, is supposed to play just fundamental role in further development of this theory. This work to be continued, but I would like to emphasize that indeed one can get partial success already at this stage towards Manning's real multiplication problem. So this is the first just very sketchy description of interaction between commutative and non-commutative. The second, which I'm not sure much has been already pronounced in this direction at this workshop, is model theoretical study of fundamental groups. This is an extremely important issue. And fundamental groups, after all, topological objects. And model theory is very well suitable to treat topological objects. And of course, there is a lot of results in the direction of non-standard topology. As far as I understand, almost nothing has been really done in the direction of the study of fundamental groups by using model theory. Now, why is this important? by many reasons, of course. And in particular, there is so-called Mativic fundamental group, and which somehow plays a central role, and which specializes to many other fundamental groups. And so this Mativic fundamental group is natural to believe it actually should exist at the level of saturated modules, not at the usual level. And therefore, model theoretical study is very important. Another thing related to this is that, well, at this workshop, many people use the word Zariski geometry, and of course, there is associated cohomology theory starts with that. But maybe you're not aware, or maybe you are, that in arithmetic geometry, basically for almost every letter of the alphabet, you have now associated cohomology theory. Betti, Kristallin, Dirac, Metal, Finite, and so on. And the issue is to find cohomology theory which starts with A. This is the issue. This is, of course, Mativic cohomology. This is Mativic cohomology, which was sought already by Grothendieck. But A also the first letter of analysis. And in fact, all these cohomology theories, they come, roughly speaking, from topology and geometry. But analytical dualities are very often much more powerful than geometrical and topological dualities, because they give duality on the whole space, not just on quotient filtration. And this absolute or Mativic cohomology theory, various things show, demonstrate, lead to hope that this should be associated to some saturated analytical theory. And it's presentation at the ordinary level. Another question which is in this direction is so-called Mativic zeta functions. Zeta functions are extremely important, and various number theorists, quite prominent, they are dreaming about so-called motherland of zeta functions and zeta values. And nobody knows how to get it. But if you use a zeta function of hyper or non-standard rational numbers, which is not so difficult to define, then you can try to use this zeta function to relate various zeta functions which we know in Archimedean setting, like usual Riemann zeta function, and also periodic L functions, which play a very important role in local number theory and also in Iwasawa theory. And Ben Clare from Nottingham, he already done research in this direction. And in particular, he already interpreted all theory of periodic interpolation by Mahler and others in the language of interpolation theory on non-standard object. So just by interpolating on this object and then descending to appropriate prime number, infinite or finite, you're going to get eventually all kinds of zeta functions in Archimedean and non-Archimedean, and they all originate from one single source. And of course, this is in the direction of the search of for the Mativic zeta function. Right, so that was the second possible direction. I will mention several more. So the third direction is various analogies between number fields and complex, well, Riemann surface, Riemannian geometry, and in particular Riemann surfaces over complex numbers, and also various analogies between number fields and global fields of positive characteristic. Well, of course, there have been already many applications, but normally the situation is like uniformity results. Like you have, this well-known principle, if you have something in characteristic zero, you have it, you can hope to expect to get it in for almost all primes in characteristic P. But this is quite different. This is different. And this analogy is very well known in number theory. I'm not sure if they are quite well known for model series. So in the direction of the first, I will give several examples. The first example comes from Tate. And so suppose we have periodic numbers, and then it has maximal unramified extension, which is generated by adding all roots of order prime to p. And then we can ask, take any element a here, and we can ask, what is the derivative of periodic number modulo prime number p? Of course, this is a kind of strange question because there are no derivatives. You're working with numbers, not with functions. But it is an idea, it was an idea of Tate, that in fact the answer is given by the following expression. Take Frobenius phi, which generates the Galois group here, act on A, subtract A to the p's power, and divide by p. So this is Tate's approach. And then, of course, this derivative is not linear at all, but it satisfies Leibniz's rule. And on the right-hand side, the object on the right-hand side is of utmost importance for number theory, because it's just one step from this object to so-called periodic logarithm and to explicit formulas in number theory, in particular, explicit reciprocity formulas in number theory. So, for example, the formula of Coates and Wiles, in some sense, uses an analog of this map. It's just a very short step from this right-hand side to explicit formula. So this, roughly speaking, replaces logarithmic derivatives for usual formulas over complex numbers or in characteristic p. And this explicit reciprocity formulas play most central role in arithmetic geometry. On the other hand, this formally looks like the usual derivative. And we've heard already so many lectures in this workshop about differential fields. So in some sense, model theory already can handle very well differential fields. So I wonder if with some additional non-trivial but finite effort, it's possible for model theories really to treat this situation inside number theory and to give model theoretical interpretation of this quasi-derivative. Now, second comes from the work of many people, but this is a well-known principle that yesterday in Bostock, he mentioned Hurwitz formula, but of course, it's classical formula working over complex numbers, in the geometrical setting. But if you have Hurwitz, if you have arithmetical Hurwitz formula, just in characteristic zero over algebraic number fields, then it implies ABC conjecture, which is, of course, one of central open problems in number theory. So there was a series of papers by Smirnov, and then again Tate, who analyzed the paper of Smirnov, and Soulier, and so on, in this direction. And again, if one can get a better grasp of the Hurwitz formula in the usual setting, functional field setting, then perhaps one can better understand what should it analog be in the arithmetical situation. So this is the third direction, just some analogies, different type analogies between different characteristics or over complex numbers in number fields. Of course, it's well known that one person can ask so many questions that hundreds of clever people won't be able to answer. So, I apologize for asking so many questions, but who knows, maybe some of younger people present in the audience, not speaking about experts, will solve some of them already in the next several years. The last third part on this should be 3a, 3b, and 3c. is the theory of Drinfield modules and their analog in characteristic zero. So in positive characteristic, we basically know everything from the point of view of number theory by using Drinfield modules, which explicitly generate abelian and non-abelian extensions. Some people who developed original Drinfield ideas even got Fields medals. But we have almost nothing, we know almost nothing about the analogy in characteristic zero. Of course, locally formal Lubin-Tate groups, they kind of analog of local Drinfield modules. But still, it's not really so precise. And globally, we don't have any analog of these Drinfield modules, which are so powerful in positive characteristics. So if we can get a better model theoretical grasp of the involved structures, any possible application in characteristic zero will be of tremendous importance. In particular, it will have application to real multiplication program, which I already mentioned earlier. Now, the time is short, so I'm switching to the last, the second half of problems. The fourth is various problems to treat model theoretically local arithmetic, which is very powerful inside number theory. And local arithmetic deals with objects which, as you can imagine, local and complete. But if from the point of view of structures, this means nothing else than applying several times int and pro limits. Several times, finitely many times. So all such kinds of objects, of course, have natural interpretation in the language of non-standard objects, which was already known to Robinson, but there has not been any serious study of local arithmetic from non-standard point of view. In particular, in local arithmetic, so-called Fontaine rings play very fundamental role, and many of their properties just cry for to be interpreted in model theoretical sense. And anyway, his theory was not really very well presented, so it also cries for good presentation, which is a different issue. The fifth direction, which is just the name, is deformation theory, which is very important, again, in many applications and realization, not only in number theory, but of course in mathematical physics and quantum groups. And of course, deformation theory includes infinitesimal deformation. And as soon as you hear the word infinitesimal, you might try to get model theoretical interpretations. So two final directions deal with two-dimensional arithmetic and quantum physics. So I will try in the last 10 minutes of my talk to sketch some of things which show up in the direction of two-dimensional arithmetic. Well, I skip almost all number theory part because I don't have time, and I spoke in Cambridge just 2 months ago, so I'll just go directly to the object which is important from model theoretical point of view. So in dimension one, you have a curve and a point on the curve. And then you can consider the local ring and then complete it, and then take its field of fractions and you get local fields. And they are kind of one-dimensional local fields. So it's already known for more than 30 years that in dimension two, if you have a surface and then a curve and a point on the surface, then to this data you can associate by repeating this procedure but twice, so-called two-dimensional local field. So two-dimensional local fields and high-dimensional local fields, it's kind of object which is basically 1975 is the year when the first papers in this direction appeared, but it's central object in two-dimensional arithmetic. So, for example, what are those two-dimensional local fields? It's in characteristic P, those are just formal power series over finite field in two variables. Not in one variable, but in two variables. So not very far away from one-dimensional. Now, in characteristic zero, if you work with horizontal fibers in relative situation, you get objects like formal power series over QP. And if you work with with vertical fibers, you get the most interesting charismatically kind of two-dimensional local field, which is denoted by this notation. I don't have time to define it, but I would like to emphasize there are three different types of two-dimensional local fields. And so these two-dimensional local fields in number theory, in two-dimensional number theory, they are involved in the study of the fundamental group, abelian part of the fundamental group of the surface. And in number theory, it's called two-dimensional class field theory. And two-dimensional class field theory, and particularly local class field theory, describes abelian extensions of such two-dimensional local fields by using Milner K2 groups. So K theory is heavily involved there. So I would like just to emphasize that this is a very important object in the study of two-dimensional arithmetical objects, in particular, zeta function of the surface. And all main conjectures for which you can get $1 million, like Birch-Wienert and Dyer conjecture, they're all about two-dimensional number theory, zeta function of the surface for elliptic curve of a number field. So I would like to now just to tell a little bit more about those two-dimensional local fields. So one can define some natural from arithmetical point of view topology on F. And in fact, the best possible definition is to give it in sequential way. So we say that a sequence of formal power series tends to zero. So this is a sequence alpha n. It tends to zero by definition if and only if the following two conditions are satisfied. First of all, sufficiently negative coefficients uniformly equal to zero. And secondly, for every I, as soon as we fix the power of T2, then the coefficients must tend to zero as soon as n goes to plus infinity. So this is a very important sequential topology, and then you declare open sets those which if contain a point, then they contain almost all elements of a sequence of points tending to it. So this is called sequential saturation topology. So this is extremely interesting topology from the point of view of model theory. I would like to emphasize this fact that all people working in two-dimensional number theory, they have been working with non-standard objects for 30 years without recognizing this. And I can tell you why. So let's take now, I'm not sure you already grasp the definition, but let's look at an example. Take element A, an integral element, and consider the sequence of powers of n when n tends to infinity. So if you apply the definition given there, it's easy to see that this tends to zero. So this implies that T2 plays the role of infinitesimally small positive element with respect to this topology. So it's positive because its powers tend to zero, but it's infinitesimally small because here you can allow any element from the integral structure of valuation greater than or equal than zero. So it's an example that we already have in two-dimensional arithmetic. We have naturally infinitesimally small positive elements. And this topology has a number of very strange properties. In particular, it's not locally compact, of course. In fact, the first two kinds of spaces, they are called arithmetical loop spaces because they also have their analogies in physics. And Feynman integration goes also over loop spaces, but over slightly different loop spaces. And also this topology is very strange because multiplication is not continuous. So it's not a topological ring, unlike dimension one. Addition is continuous, multiplication is not. But multiplication is sequentially continuous. If you have two sequences converging somewhere not to zero, then their product converges to the product of the limits. So it's extremely strange topology, which probably explains why not so many people try to work in this part of two-dimensional number theory. But as soon as you understand it, then it has many important applications. So in particular, on this topology, on this field, two-dimensional field, if you want to pass to two-dimensional zeta function, then you have to be able to integrate over these two-dimensional fields. And to be able to integrate over these two-dimensional fields is hard, because those are not locally compact spaces. You want, of course, translation invariant measure. It's very hard. So eventually, such an integration theory appeared 3 years ago. And what is amazing then, in the terminology of Macpherson's talk, you just define the measure on definable without quantified sets. And this measure, so if A is the set of definable without quantified sets, in other words, a Boolean ring generated by open balls, then there is a measure on this Boolean ring, but it takes not real values, but real values in formal power series over reals. This itself is viewed as two-dimensional local field, so it has its own topology. So you have a measure which is not real valued, but two-dimensional valued, so to say. This measure is essentially different from the measure of Deneuve and Lazier, and would be really very nice to find a true motivic measure which specializes both to this and to this. And this measure is almost countably additive, which is very important for the integration theory. Namely, if we have a set in this ring, which is disjoint union of countably many, then the measure of A equals to the sum of the measures, if and only if the right-hand side absolutely converges. In dimension one, we don't have condition of absolute convergence because it automatically satisfied. In dimension two, we have to impose it. Absolute convergence means in this right-hand side, so it's a kind of new notion which I don't define. So after you have this measure, you can define the integral against this measure. And then, in fact, you also have definition of Fourier transform, which is extremely important because as soon as you have the definition of Fourier transform, then in appropriate definition of zeta integrals, Fourier duality corresponds to the functional equation of the zeta function. The functional equation for zeta function of a surface is closely related to for elliptic surface, is closely related to modularity of L function of elliptic curve. And in particular, it implies Fermat-Last theorem. So all this direction eventually supposed to lead to a second proof of Fermat-Last theorem and many other results as well. So I would like to emphasize that all these objects, they definitely have a lot of features of non-standard objects, and therefore I'm sure this measure can be interpreted model theoretically, because already this ring is just the ring of definable without quantifier subsets of two-dimensional local field. So finally, the seventh direction, which I already mentioned earlier in my talk, is M-theoretical interpretation of quantum field theory. In fact, there are already many small papers which in non-standard way interpret Feynman integral. So if you ever read literature on the Feynman integral, you may know that, those integrals often diverge. They are also rapidly oscillating. And to calculate them, you apply renormalization and regularization procedures. And basically, those are just some recipes from alchemistry. There is no systematical understanding of them, even though there are some partial understandings. So, for example, renormalization procedures lead to so-called renormalization group, and it's a group of automorphisms of certain structures. And then, of course, you have associated gauge theory and many other things, which like string theory in quantum physics. String is just, you can say that string is just infinitesimal neighborhood of a path. So again, it's really an object which can be interpreted using saturated models. So if only we can interpret Feynman integration by using model theory, we definitely can interpret by using non-standard analysis, but currently there are about 10 different papers on this subject which show just top of iceberg. Definitely there must be a very complete theory behind all this, which explains in particular renormalization procedures. Because you just go to saturated module, you calculate the integral there, and then you descend down. In the process of your calculation, standard images of your partial calculation results correspond to infinity, which is exactly the situation for normal calculations. But eventually you end up with concrete limited non-standard number. So this is another direction which is really very interesting. Of course, then if there are any partial results in those seven directions, they should support my original thesis that model theory might be very, very useful for you pursuing analogies between number theory and quantum physics. I can only refer to Manin's experience, who studied both number theory and quantum physics and logic, and even published a book on logic. So all hints show that there might be a very bright future for model theory, and you have all the power to make this future extremely good.
Are there any questions or comments?
Small question. This map phi from the periodic numbers to the unramified extension, what was it exactly? I didn't. Lifting of the Frobenius? Okay.
So it's a standard Frobenius. But Frobenius is not the same.
There is some model theory related to this, but it's not merely on the width vectors.
Yes.
I mean the model theory on the width vectors would be different from the model theory on this thing, but the model theory on the width vectors is reasonably well understood, in fact, for that operator.
That also includes
the
deep.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Can you say a couple more words about the Motivic zeta function?
Well, I wish I could. After all, people are
that is important to see. but it should be defined on what object.
So my personal direction to my team.